Time now to look at a couple of books. Up first, a new Scandinavian thriller writer, and not only new to me, but this is a book called For the Missing, is the first book by Lena Bengtsdotter. Yes, Bengts daughter, Dotter. And it's set in Sweden, and it tells the story of a missing teenager in a small town a couple of hours' drive from Stockholm. And if this is what small-town Sweden is like, wow. Wow, because there's so much underage drinking and drug-taking and fornication. Really? That's what small-town Sweden is like? Nasty stuff. And this is a town called Gullspång, and Annabelle has gone. She was last seen on her way home from a party. And the police in Gullspång are not particularly good at following up on cases like this. So a team is sent from Stockholm, and in charge of that team is Charlie Lager. And Charlie, in this case, is female, short for Charlene. And the problem is that Charlie left Gullspång when she was quite young, as soon as she could, and she has terrible, terrible memories of the place. So she has to go back, and she has to deal with the possibility of being recognized, and she has to deal with the possibility of old memories becoming fresh memories again, and she has to deal with a small-town police force that is not at all happy about the big city detectives coming in and taking over. And her youth in Gullspång was not a particularly happy one. And she's still suffering from that. She herself drinks too much and too often. And when she does drink, she falls into bed with strangers rather too easily. And that puts her in trouble with the authorities often. But because she's a very, very, very good detective, they tend to look the other way. And so this maelstrom is created. And you follow the story in real time, and then there are two other stories that are told in the book. One is on that night. So Annabelle's at the start of that day, and then the next time, 20, 30 pages later, a little bit more on that. And then there's another story involving two young girls, Rosa and Alice. And you wonder who Rosa and Alice are, because there are no adults or people in the book called Rose and Alice. So who are they, and what role do they play in this? It's very beautifully plotted and well written and well translated. And I got to the end and turned the next page, and it said, coming 2019, Detective Inspector Charlie Lager returns in the next thriller from Lena Bengtsdotter. And I thought, yes, very pleased about that. The first one is called For the Missing, Lena Bengtsdotter, and I have seen it in most of the bookshops into which I have been recently. Testaments, Margaret Atwood. Whoa! There hasn't ever been anything like the release of this book in adult fiction. Yes, the Harry Potter books, certainly after the first two or three began to build the momentum, that was extraordinary. But the worldwide frenzy around the release of the follow-up book, The Testaments, was quite extraordinary. On Wednesday next week, I'm going to be speaking to the director of the movie that was made about events on the release night involving a lot of Margaret Atwood. So, what does one think? How does one read it? I haven't watched any of The Handmaid's Tale television. I went back and I reread in this last week. I reread The Handmaid's Tale, and then I read The Testaments. So my thinking about the book is not influenced in any way by the television series. Sometimes I would be at the computer while it was on. Emma was watching it on from the sofa, but I really have no knowledge of it whatsoever. Look, it's really good. It's really, really good. Margaret Atwood doesn't know how to write a bad book. It's 35 years since The Handmaid's Tale was written. And since then, a lot of you read that book and Gilead, and you have a lot of questions you want to ask. And it's almost as if The Testaments is an attempt to answer some of those questions. It opens 15 years after the end of The Handmaid's Tale. And I get the sense that's kind of to give the movie series, the television series, a chance to catch up, to fill stuff in that 15 years before you get here. And there's one detail from the TV series, from The Handmaid's Tale, baby Nicole, well, supposedly Commander Waterford and his wife's child, but it's actually Offer June's child, fathered by her lover Nick. And Nicole is smuggled into Canada as a baby and not been seen since. That's the only really significant bit of The Handmaid's Tale and the television series that's brought into this book. So we are now 15 years later, and more handmaids have been helped to freedom by the underground female road. That's not been good for Gilead. It's kind of dog-eat-dog maturity. There's an enormous amount of energy going into tracking down baby Nicole. Baby Nicole is the veritable poster child for Gilead. The Republic wants to reclaim Nicole as its own. And the novel is narrated by three different female voices. The first belongs to Aunt Lydia herself. She is writing her memoir. She's writing her memoir secretly. And she says, "For your edification, my unknown reader." And then there's Agnes, who is a young woman who's grown up in Gilead. She's being groomed to marry a commander. And then there's Daisy, teenager, living in Canada. And Daisy thinks that the people with whom she lives are her parents, except that it was like I was a prize cat. They were cat-sitting. And the narrative thrust of the novel is how these young women may or may not be connected to one other and to Gilead. Daisy, right in the beginning, discovers on her birthday that she's a fraud, a forgery done on purpose. Agnes remembers a hazy memory of running through a forest with someone holding my hand. Aunt Lydia knows everything. Aunt Lydia is the omniscient narrator. And A lot of questions are asked. I mean, when I read The Handmaid's Tale first time around and this time around, one of the questions is, why do these women, Aunt Lydia chief amongst them, why do they allow themselves to join in Gilead's monstrous attack on women? And you get her backstory. And the inner workings of Gilead are exposed in a much more open way than was the case in The Handmaid's Tale. And Atwood writes just extraordinarily. She's still incredibly angry and savage about God with his special interest in the polluting blood that comes out of girls. She's still furious with sexually predatory men who prefer their underage victims to seem, and I quote, not fully human, with a naughty core to them. I mean, there's one image that sticks in my mind, a paedophile dentist whose hand sits on a pubescent child's breast like a large crab. But there's a kind of sense of an almost happy ending coming. It's really, really, really good. Really, really, really good. And there is a kind of button. This is a very personal thing, and maybe if I'd seen the television series, it would be different. But having reread The Handmaid's Tale before this, there was something about the mystery, the ambiguity, and the sort of claustrophobic oppression of Gilead narrated in that one voice. And all of the mystery, and how did it happen, and what do these things really mean? Atwood spells things out so much more in The Testaments than she did in The Handmaid's Tale. And I think for some readers, that would be an advantage. They don't like the ambiguity. They don't like the phosphorescent denseness. I do. And that's a personal reading choice. So, yeah, I mean, it's an extraordinarily well-written book. And it is a very, very worthy successor. And it does give the people who are in charge of the television series an enormous amount of new material with which to work. And for a second week in a row, I don't have time for a proper review of Felipe Fernandez Armesto's Out of Our Minds, What We Think and How We Came to Think It. So that'll have to wait until next week.